My name is Jared Gerrish. I'm part of the planning committee, also work with Action International, which is based out of Seattle, but live here in Twin Cities and go to Bethlehem Baptist Church. So welcome to the session. It's an important part of missionary care, and we're so thrilled that you're all here and thrilled to have Allie Jackson here from Reach Global. So welcome and thank you. And then you can just click on your...
I did already. I clicked it on. Yeah. Hi. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. So glad you guys all chose to come to my workshop. Part of me was hoping that no one would come because I don't really like public speaking. But you know, it's good that you guys care about missionary kids and all that to talk about this, so that's even better. So I want to tell you a little bit about me to start. That's baby me. I grew up in Brazil as a missionary kid myself.
I'm from Brazil.
What's that? Wow! I was wondering from your accent, but I didn't want to assume. She sounds like she's Brazilian. I grew up in Rio.
Okay.
Rio de Janeiro. So I was born there. I lived there until I was 16. So your beaches, obviously, ocean. Rio is the city with the giant Christ statue.
Yeah.
Huge city. I loved it. Just a wonderful childhood growing up there. It was rough when I transitioned to the U.S. I can't even say really back to the U.S. because I'd never lived in the U.S. Except for like, you know, visits or like being here for a year. But you know, Brazil was my home growing up. So moving to the U.S. was really tough. And I had someone come alongside me who was an MK caregiver, someone who does what I do now, working with missionary kids, really understood like what transition is, what's American culture, how do you adapt? And that helped me so much. I decided when I was a teenager that I wanted to become an MK caregiver. I studied psychology at the University of Northwestern, St. Paul, and then went on to get my master's in member care from Columbia International University. And I've been with Reach Global for 8 years now, working with missionary kids. And this is me today. I'm married to Noah, my husband. We just got a house in Richfield, so really close to here. And yeah, we have two cats. No kids yet. And I was just curious for people coming here today, what brings you to this workshop? So if you're like a parent of MKs, if you want to raise your hand. Okay, so we have some parents. If you are like part of a church and you're coming here to look at MKs in church, American church. Okay. What about missionaries? And do we have any TCKs? Nice, we've got some TCKs. Awesome. All right, so this is what we're going to be talking about today, starting with what is a TCK? Maybe you heard me say that and thought, that's a different acronym from MK. What is that? How do missionary kids relate to the church? And we'll look more at a spiritual focus. So we're going to start looking at missionary kids and like their cultural makeup and then shift to more of the spiritual makeup. And then what can churches do to help, because that's what we really want to know, right? So I think it's important to start with the foundation of really understanding who are missionary kids, what do they really need, and then looking at how can we address that. Okay. What is a TCK? A TCK is a third culture kid. A third culture kid is a person who has spent a significant part of his or her developmental years outside the parents' culture. The TCK frequently builds relationships to all of the cultures while not having full ownership in any. Although elements from each culture may be assimilated into the TCK's life experiences, the sense of belonging is in relationship to others of similar background. That's from this book. Maybe some of you have heard it or read it. This is like the TCK Bible, the original book written about third culture kids. So I'm going to just unpack this because it's a kind of a technical definition. So a third culture kid, significant part of his or her developmental years. That just means when they're a kid, they live overseas. And build relationships to all of the cultures, not having full ownership in any. So like if an American kid were to grow up in Kenya, they're not really Kenyan and they're not really American. So they have relationships to both cultures, but they're not fully either one. And the sense of belonging is in relationship to others of similar background. So for this kid who's kind of American, kind of Kenyan, they really relate to other people who are stuck in that in-between. Maybe someone who has a British passport but grew up in Thailand. They don't have either country in common, but they can really connect up that in-between space. So if you're wondering where the term like third came from, what are the first and second cultures? The first culture is the legal culture. Come on in. The first culture is the legal culture. So like my parents are American and I have an American passport, so that's my first culture. The second culture is where you live overseas. So for me, that would be Brazil. A lot of kids have more than one if their families move around. So if they like started in Thailand and then moved to Turkey and ended up in Japan, those are all their second cultures. And then the third culture is that in between, that expat culture. And a lot of people think the third culture is like the mix of all of their cultures together, like I'm half Brazilian, half American, and that's third culture. And that's not really it, it's expat culture. So if you're at an international school or an international church, there's this like international community that develops that's really similar no matter where in the world you go. So, you know, if I am with someone who has a Japanese passport, who grew up in Belgium, we can really connect over that expat culture, that in-betweenness of living between all these worlds, even if any of our, we haven't lived in any of the same places, but we have that in common. That's the third culture, and that's where these kids grow up. They grow up in expat culture, and that's where they're at home, not really in any of the actual countries. So missionary kids are third culture kids. There's other third culture kids. Can you guys think of any?
Military.
Yep. What else?
Business.
Diplomatic. Yeah.
Refugees.
There's a debate over not whether or not refugees are TCKs or not. Part of it is that third culture kids usually move back to the country where their parents are from. And a huge part of being a third culture kid is that like re-entering of the parents' culture or the first culture, but there's a lot of crossover and similarities with refugees. Yeah. So next I'm going to show a video that I made a couple years ago interviewing missionary kids in my organization about what they're grateful for and what the challenges are of being a TCK. So let's hope this works.
My name is Sarah Heather.
Sarah Bella.
My name is Joseph Chandra.
My name is Ashton.
Jonathan Chandra.
My name is Dylan Nicholson.
Mark Johnson.
My name is Sarah Cryer.
I think I was really grateful for being able to be involved in different people's lives, being able to show them, and then thank God for my questions. Being able to talk to anyone, and it doesn't matter who, being able to meet us together in different places, and able to be a community in different places.
I'm especially grateful for, I guess, the wider understanding of the government, and my ability to appreciate different cultures as a result of my efforts.
The friends, languages, foods, the cross-cultural experiences, the everything. I just want to be grateful for, you know, being a part of another culture and I just experience that so many other kids get to do. And I'm grateful that I got to have that opportunity and be part of something that's even more and more been part of the time and that God taught me something that I can hopefully push aside it. So, getting out of challenge and things that, you know, you can do. And you get to move a lot, you get to experience, but there's no, like, kindness that comes with it, and the sense of security that it lasts.
I guess most of your relationships, like those friendships and other things, just because you've always had this nagging thought in your head that it's not going to be like a good thing. You kind of have everything like started and had a deep, like, really deep relationship with everyone.
Sometimes I feel like I don't fit in, but you're able to do other things. You can do the PCK, move around, and everything.
Something that I said, I have trust and that I can go and I'm not sure what's going on with them. And maybe I was like the kind of little child of God that I'm
ready. I mean, like I said before, you can go anywhere. Everywhere, wherever the wind blows, that's where we are. Why would anyone want to live like any other way?
Okay. So I wanted to have you break up into pairs or small groups and talk about, like, what stood out to you from this video, or what do you know about MKs, TCKs that stands out as the positives and negatives? Do you need a couple more minutes?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. I'm really curious what you guys were talking about. What did you guys say? What stood out to you about being a TCK? You can just shout it out. Yeah?
I think that we mostly focus on like the core issue of the MCA's childhood is different than the core issue or problems that the average child faces.
Mm.
Right? So they're always under scrutiny, always in the eye of everybody else. And I feel like it forces the child to either become comfortable with their differentness or create a facade in order to fit in. And that's something that a lot of children do, but I think that MKs are uniquely positioned to have to make that decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
So, yeah, that's mostly what we talked about.
Mm-hmm. Good.
The revolving door that is constant and fast and the relational. I really related to that as a third cultured adult that left college and didn't come back till recently. It's not the same for me, but my heart just breaks.
Yeah, you've lived in that expat culture, that in-between space where MKs grow up, but you lived as an adult.
Yeah, and they're my nieces and nephews.
Yeah.
The fact that TCKs, they don't even share a culture with their parents, that's hard. That's
funny.
Like, when I would talk to my parents, they'd be like, what's the big deal, Melissa? It's just a goodbye. It's like, you didn't have to do that. You, father, grew up in small-town Minnesota your whole life. Like, we do not share. You do not understand, like, the devastation. The good things, too, for sure, but it's a cultural difference between you and your parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
We have two elementary-age grandchildren with their parents in Thailand, and one of the agonies for these little kids that they express is leaving family, leaving cousins and grandparents, and we have that angst too. You know, there's ways of communicating, but you don't see them, you don't hug them, you don't have, and wanting to come back here for Christmas, you know, that the little girl said, let's get on a plane and get back for. So that separation, I think, is really hard for the kids, finding substitute cousins.
Yeah, it's probably why we talk about missions family. Yeah. You don't have your family on the field. You have to find other people to be that for you. As a grandparent, I'm sure that's heartbreaking.
I'm a military kid, so I really resonated when one of the children said that being hesitant to form those kind of relationships because you're just trying to take a bond.
Yeah, so you're a TCK too.
Broken trust, trauma attention, and how hard it is, right? And I'm just thinking here as a therapist, like all the anxiety, depression, mental health that comes to these kids that usually it's very
they don't have anybody to talk to, or even somebody who has mental health training, you know, and sucks.
My own kids who grew up to TCKs, the identity issue is really unique. Then you have a foot in both worlds, perhaps. You were passport country and then your newly adopted cultural identity. And then having that shared ground, like was mentioned here, with other expat culture, but feeling like the foot in both worlds, you're neither in either of those worlds.
No.
It's only a toehold in each world, and so it can feel tenuous. And so that identity, as much as it's bolstered by the shared sense of community with other expats, there's a tremendous sense of loneliness or feeling like I don't fully fit into either of those others, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is huge. That's a huge thing, identity. Actually, I'm going to transition to my next slide that pulled out some of the things that I feel like are really important to talk about. And identity is right there. And I'll just start there and then move back up. As you said it really well, if I am not really American and I'm not really Brazilian, who am I? And I think, you know, what you're talking about with that facade, it's like, it isn't always a facade. Maybe you really kind of are two people. You know, I think I kind of had one person that I was in the United States or with American-speaking friends, and then when I was with my Brazilian friends, I talked different. My voice was pitched lower. I had a different walk. I had different things that I talked about and interests. And I was both people. You know, both of them were me. And so you can't just like choose one because they were both me. I grew up in both worlds, and I wasn't totally, you know, just. I couldn't totally fit in with either one. Maybe sometimes I thought, like, oh, I think these people, I'm getting away with it. They think I'm one of them. They think I'm American. But I knew I wasn't, even if I could fool the people around me. And, you know, then they would have some reference to a commercial that they saw growing up, and I'm like, okay, I don't know what that is. I never watched American commercials. I can't relate to that. And then the question is also, like, who am I when no one else is around? You know, when I'm not, you know, in expat culture, I'm not with my Brazilian friends, I'm not with my American friends, I'm just by myself, who am I? What accent do I have? What language do I think in? You know, and that's hard. That's really hard, and people have to wrestle through that. And I think kids have come up with a lot of different answers. There isn't just one, but everyone has to think that through. So let's go back to the top. Fun travel and experiences, learning languages and cultures. I think that's what a lot of kids said for the gratitude part. I think for a lot of them, it makes it worth it. You know, it can be a hard life. It's a lot of goodbyes. But most of them love the travel. They love learning about new cultures. They love learning new languages and having this unique childhood with so rich and diversity. They get to see the poorest of the poor, and sometimes the richest of the rich. And a lot of them aren't materialistic because they know that experiences and people are what really matter. And they grow up having that kind of like maturity early on of having that experience and knowing that. And that's something that's really beautiful and we need to celebrate. Moving a lot. I think that one's kind of obvious. I actually did a series of videos, so we're going to show some more later. In one of them, we talk about moving, and I asked the kids, how many different homes have you lived in? And they're all like, I don't know, 13 to 18 probably, who I interviewed. And they're all saying, oh, 8 homes I've lived in, 14-year-old kid. 10 homes. One of them's like, oh, I've actually only lived in 4. It's not very many. I'm like, for most people, that's a lot for a childhood to have 4 different homes. And, you know, that doesn't even count all the moves back and forth between homes, right? Because you live in one home, and then you go somewhere else, and then you go back, and then you go somewhere else, and then somewhere else, and maybe you go back again, and then you go somewhere else. And, you know, some of these homes are ones that they have moved back and forth from a lot. And, you know, there are kids who live in one place and don't move as often, but they can't really escape this because the people around them are moving. So, you know, I was in Rio for 16 years, and I had some friends who actually were there the whole time as well, other kids on our mission. But I had a new best friend every 2 years because everyone else was moving. So I stayed at our international school, and then I had a Finnish best friend who was there for 2 years. And then she moved away. So then I had a Danish best friend for a couple years. And then another MK came, and then they left. And even if you're not moving, everyone around you is. So you can't get away from that. Rootlessness and restlessness. This one, you know, it kind of ties into other things. You know, especially identity, having rootedness, groundedness. But also ties into the moving with restlessness. You know, a lot of kids, if they have that pattern of moving every 2 years or every 4 years, that's normal. And it's still normal when they're adults. So you'll have kids who go to college and it's 4 years, and then they move for a job. Then they spend a couple years there, and then they're like, oh, I've been here too long. I've known these people too long. I don't know how to be friends with someone for longer than 3 years, so I'm going to move again. And maybe they don't say that, but they find excuses to move, and they'll spend their whole lives moving constantly. And that's not always the case. My brother got married, settled down, and he's never going to move. So sometimes it's the opposite. You know, it's a lot of these things. This isn't every TCK. They're all individuals. Mm-hmm. They're all just people who have had this shared experience, and they live it in different ways. So that's important to keep in mind too. Goodbyes and loss. When you're moving and people around you are moving and you're always saying goodbye, there's a lot of losses. You know, every time you leave or someone leaves you, a little part of you is taken away. There's loss of people. We talked about that. Loss of places, all the places you've lived. The things, you can only pack so much in a suitcase, and you have to leave a lot of important things behind. The smells. And that's a weird one, but sometimes you smell something and you're like, oh, that smells like home, or oh, that smells like Thailand, or these places that you've been. And you lose that when you move. Pets, leaving pets behind, that's a loss. The familiar, knowing where things are in the grocery store. When you move, you lose that. You don't know where things are anymore. Nothing's familiar. I wrote this one down because I thought of it the other day. Knowing what to say when someone tries to open your bathroom door. In Brazil, we just say, tem gente, which means there's people. And everyone says that when you're like trying to, like, someone's like barging into your stall door. I don't know what people say in America. I don't think there's a phrase for that. And that's a loss. It's uncomfortable. That's something I lost.
People here.
See, I could do that, but then they would know I'm not American.
Right.
Yeah. So there's all of these losses, and those need to be grieved. You know, that's what you do with loss when someone dies. But all of these things, even if no one dies, it's like everything you lose is a little death. Because when someone moves away and you never see them again, they might as well be dead. Because they're not going to talk to them again. You can keep up online, and that's great, but it isn't the same. And so there's all these losses, and those need to be grieved. And I think, you know, TCKs can really get caught up in these first two of, like, the fun and the travel and, you know, so many hellos. Because, you know, as many goodbyes as there are, there's just as many hellos, and that's amazing. But they might forget all the losses and think, I had an amazing childhood. I have parents who love me. I've had so many experiences. I've had a privileged life. But it's also a life that is full of grief and loss, and that needs to be recognized. There's this book, it's fairly new, called The Grief Tower. This is written by a missionary kid, Lauren Wells, and it's a really practical guide to work through with kids. The idea is that every grief stacks up like a tower, and if we just let it stack up, it's eventually going to topple, and it can topple, you know, I don't know, in really uncomfortable ways, in unhealthy ways. So, you know, dealing with that grief before it explodes and unstacking it, you know, as it happens is really crucial. So I recommend this book for grief. All right, so that's kind of the cultural side of TCKs or MKs. You need to stop saying TCKs now and start saying MKs. I feel like, no whiteboard marker, if MKs were in like a Venn diagram, there's like one circle that's TCKs, and there's another circle that's ministry kids, pastors' kids, missionary kids. And that's the more spiritual side that other third culture kids don't have, is that missionary kids are growing up in the church. Their parents are missionaries who are called to serve God, and it's a very high calling, it's a very important calling, and that's part of what's informing the spiritual side. So what comes to mind when you think of pastor's kids or missionary kids and how they relate to God in the church? You can just name like stereotypes. What do you think of? I won't be offended.
Well, they have to be perfect.
They have to be perfect. A lot of pressure.
They rebel or act out.
Yeah, they rebel. That's a stereotype I think you see in a lot of like movies and TV shows. It's like, oh, the pastor's daughter is out there sleeping with all the bad boys. Yeah. What else?
Sometimes the negative attitude toward God. Mm-hmm. You know, you called, my grandson, they said to him that they were going to obey, and know Jesus going overseas, and he sort of, he was about 4 or 5 at the time, said, well, then I don't like Jesus.
Then I don't like Jesus.
Just
startled, yeah.
You know, they didn't mm-hmm. think about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If Jesus is the one making him move away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that I think is an interesting distinction of missionary kids, is that, you know, for other TCKs, it's the military that's making them move away, or it's their parents' jobs internationally, or it's the U.S. government because they're diplomatic, and, you know, for MKs, it's God that's making them move.
Mm-hmm.
He's the reason that they're going through all of this, for good or for bad. So... the angel or the rebel, and we talked about this, the stereotype of like, either they're like perfect, they sit so still in the pew and they take notes on their dad's sermons, they get straight A's, and their hair is, you know, nice and straight, and they wear the long skirt and never show any cleavage, and, you know, that's like the perfect little kid. Or there's the rebel, and it's, oh, they're off doing these things and they hate God and they're just rebelling because their dad's a pastor. And I think that's an interesting point, is that kids don't really get credit for their decisions, whether the angel or the rebel. It's kind of like, I'm damned if I do and damned if I don't. It's like, if they're good, oh, it's just because they're the pastor's kid and their parents are so great and they follow the rules because they're the pastor's kid. And if they're like kind of not so great and rebelling and maybe doing drugs or have an eating disorder or something, oh, it's because they're the pastor's kid. And they're doing all this stuff because they're rebelling against it. It's like, they don't really get credit for making a decision. It's anything they do, it's because they're a pastor's kid. You know, and maybe they would have been a great kid if they weren't a missionary kid too. But we don't know. Expected to be a role model, know the Bible well. That's pretty obvious. It's there. I have a memory of like in elementary school. I was in a Bible class at my school, and I mean international school. We didn't have like just Christians or just MKs. We had like other TCKs as well, and we had some kind of Bible trivia thing, or the game where you like put the Bible up and then find the verse really fast. And I didn't win one time, and another kid who wasn't a missionary kid was like, but you're like a missionary kid, you should like know the Bible really well, right? I don't know why that stuck with me. It was like, I should always win Bible trivia? Because I'm the pastor's kid? Is that like an expectation on me? That even other kids outside the church would expect of me, and that's put on, you know, a lot of kids. Pressure to perform for parent supporters. So I think the time where like the dial of like turn up the perfect is the most is when kids are visiting supporting churches or staying in supporters' homes. You know, the more still the kids sit in the pew, the greater is going to be the money put into the offering basket. Because people will look at them and be like, oh, those are such good kids. They must have such good parents, which means they must be really good missionaries. And what if there's a kid who's sticking their gum under the seat and running around and poking other kids and pulling hair, and people are thinking, that kid is so uncontrolled and really badly behaved. Those parents are not doing a good job. What if they're also not doing a good job on the mission field? You know, I don't think anyone tells kids this, that this is what's happening, but they're smart. You know, kids know what's happening, and they can extrapolate. And I think, you know, when parents are telling them, like, oh, you can't wear that top to that church, that's a supporting church, or we're going to drive the bad-looking car and not the expensive-looking car to this church because we need to look, you know, like we need support, because we do. And let's not post those pictures on social media because, you know, a vacation in Hawaii was really practical for, like, the flights that we were doing, but people are going to think that we're, like, rolling in it if we post pictures of us in our bikinis in Hawaii, and then we won't get the funds that we need. And so, you know, that is put on these kids. There's pressure. You have to look good at church. You have to look good for supporters. And then I have to be perfect. I think that was the first thing that someone said. I have to be perfect. It's the title of this book. I Have to Be Perfect and Other Person Heresies. Which is where I'm getting a lot of this information. I read this book when I was just out of college, and I just, like, wept through the whole thing. It's a list of all the lies that missionary kids and pastor's kids believe about themselves or God as a result of growing up in ministry. If I can find the page. I Have to Be Perfect. I should already know that. I'm here for others. I'm different. I can't trust anyone. I can ruin my parents' ministry. Other people's needs are more important than my own. I'm damned if I do and damned if I don't. And the last one, God is disappointed with me. I think, can you see how, you know, those lies kind of stack up? If these are the expectations that my parents have of me, that churches have of me, of people in the mission field have of me, is this what God expects of me too? You know, these are God's representatives. This is the pressure that I'm under. And you know what? No kid can live up to that. They're not perfect. They don't know everything. They're going to mess up. They're going to want to post those pictures on social media. And, you know, if that's what God expects of them, they're not going to measure up. They can't. No one can, because they're not perfect. And so they get this idea that, like, God's only happy with them when they're doing really good things and being that perfect kid. And they're not going to be that all the time. So when they're not, God's disappointed in them. You know, and we know that he's not. But just saying that isn't really enough, is it? You know, they're still going to feel that. And that's sad. May believe the church exists to serve others, but never them, or the opposite. That was kind of mentioned in my list. That I'm here for others. Other people's needs are more important than mine. I think, you know, when you're on the field and there are people who are, like, starving, or your dad's a doctor and there's people who are dying, or there's a sermon that needs to be prepared because all these people need to hear the gospel, then you know what? My science homework can wait. Because it's not as important as people hearing the gospel. It's not as important as raising support. And so, you know, most parents aren't saying this to their kids. They're not saying, like, oh, you just handle that on your own. But they'll see the pressure their parents are under, and they love their parents, and they're like, I can handle this myself. You know, I'm having some suicidal thoughts, but that's not as important as, like, the other person over there who really needs God. So I'm just going to stay quiet and deal with it myself. And, yeah, the church for them is something that they're serving out of most of the time. So even into adulthood, a lot of them will join a church and be like, okay, where can I get connected? I'm going to be on the worship team. I'm going to help with kids. I'm going to do this all stuff. And never really let people minister to them because that's what they do. They're there for other people. The opposite, I think, comes sometimes for missionary kids when they feel like the church owes them. Like, I just came back from this horrible experience being a missionary kid, and so I'm going to show up at this church and ask for free housing and a scholarship and money because you owe me because I went through this, and my parents have sacrificed, and so, like, give me all this stuff. So you can see the opposite, too. I just kind of see, like, right in the middle, right? Yeah. Timothy Sanford. Yeah. It's a really good book. I think the author, you know, I don't remember if he's a pastor's kid or a missionary's kid, but there's a lot of overlap there.
And all the persona characters.
Yes.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Are we doing our time?
Short question.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned just very briefly suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any statistics, is there anything that would say this is something that we follow up on?
I don't have statistics. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, these are kids. If there's depression and suicide in the general population, it's probably just as much for missionary kids because they have the same genetic makeup as the rest of the population. There's nothing inherent in them that would prevent mental illness. So that's definitely, it can be there. You know, they can have...
They're more vulnerable.
Yeah, they could be more vulnerable because of the trauma and the stuff they go through. So, you know, there's eating disorders, there's suicidal thoughts, there's depression, there's suicide, there's drugs. You know, I think that's it's just there, you know. Not all of them, for sure, but it's there. Do you have any other questions before I move on to the next section? I think it could help for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there's like a magic formula that you can do to like prevent any of this from happening. Like, there's so much you can do to like mitigate it. But I don't think there's any one thing that's like, well, if you tell your kids this, then this isn't going to happen to them. You know, I can't make that promise. Because I think, you know, even if parents are amazing, and a lot of them are really amazing, and they don't want their kids to feel like they're less important, and they want their needs to go first, you know, it just depends on the kid. Maybe some of them don't have these thoughts, don't go through this. You know, every kid's different, and every situation's different. But that can definitely help. Mm-hmm. Okay, next section. How can the church help? So I just wanted to highlight like some key needs or like struggles or points where, you know, the church can really like step in and be really helpful to TCKs. The first one is TCKs are highly mobile and say lots of goodbyes. We've talked about this a lot. They may need help getting connected in the U.S. They may be resistant to making new friends. I was talking to, you want to share what you told me earlier about making friends?
So I came to the United States when I was 18 for college, and I just said goodbye to everything, and I was so angry. And I walked around my college campus saying in my head, I hate you. I hate you. I will not be a friend. I will not say goodbye to one more person. And truthfully, like, it's still, it's a battle with friendship. Because it's like, you'll be gone in a year. That's my crutch to bear. Like, you know, that's my cross to bear. Even, you can spiritualize it too. Like, yeah, this is my thing, is no one is in my life consistently. And so I was so angry. I had so much pain. And I didn't have the words to be like, oh, this is grief. This is not anger. This is grief, you know? So it took the Lord softening my heart over 3 years before I was like, okay, you know, Americans aren't actually that bad. They sure love Jesus a lot. Like, I think this is worth investing in. But it took me so long because I was just in so much pain, especially coming back to the States for college.
So it might not be a lot of things you can do to help someone, except it sounds like love you and show Jesus. Show them, like, hey, not all Americans are bad, and maybe it takes time. I thought of some practical things you can do. Ask them or their parents what they're into and help get them connected. I think this is good for, like, younger children. A lot of them aren't in the U.S. for very long, maybe it's 6 months, a year, sometimes 3 months, you know, but still, like, investing in things, like joining gymnastics, joining a youth group, those kinds of things, those are important for them to still be building a life, and you can always help with that. Take them clothes shopping for winter clothes or other needs, especially if we're in Minnesota. They don't. Most of them aren't coming from climates quite this cold, and they might think that they've got a little jacket that's going to do great, and it probably won't. So, you know, practical stuff. Take them shopping. I always loved going shopping when I came to the U.S. for new clothes because I was like very into fashion and stuff. And my coworker Heidi, who I work with in Reach Global, told me a story recently of someone took her shopping when she moved to the U.S. for new clothes. And they took someone with her age to help her, like, find stuff that was, like, in fashion. And they bought her all these, like, preppy clothes and tight-fitting and very fashionable. And she was more like a grunge rock kind of girl. And then she had to wear all these preppy clothes because she didn't have money to buy new clothes. So I think something to keep in mind when you're helping TCKs is always ask. Like, what do you want? What do you need? What's, like, specific to you? Do you want grunge rock t-shirts? Or do you want cute sweaters? Like, yes, take them clothes shopping, but make sure it works for them. They need help with practical skills, like driving, applying for jobs, or finding summer housing during college. This is more for older kids, especially when moving here for college. They aren't moving here with their parents. Their parents are usually still overseas, and they might be moving somewhere where they don't have family. So who's going to teach them how to drive a car? Or, yeah, open a bank account. They've never done that before. There's so many practical needs. And I think, you know, in helping them with this practical stuff, you can be showing them the love of the American church and that there are people who care and can be good friends and that it's worth it to make new friends and to say those hellos, even if they're going to end your goodbyes. It's always worth it. MKs usually visit a lot of churches with their parents. They can get tired of meeting new people or worn down by constant travel. feel like I did this less than other kids, but I know some of them, they like, missionaries take a road trip, like, all around the U.S. Every week, it's a new church. Every week, a new Sunday school, a new person who goes up to them and says, "Hi, do you remember me? I changed your diaper." "Hey, do you remember me? I stayed in your house in Romania." And you're like, "I've had 500 people stay in my house in Romania." And for these people, it's like, the memory that they have with the TCK is really significant, but they have had so many people in and out of their lives, right? So reintroduce yourself when you meet MKs. I was originally going to say, this is really important for young MKs, but I actually met someone at this conference who knew who I was, and I didn't remember who they were. So reintroduce yourself to adult MKs as well. It would be helpful. You just meet so many people when your parents are raising support. Give MKs permission to turn down public appearances. Some kids love getting on stage and singing the song in Spanish and having people clap and getting attention or being introduced in Sunday school every week and getting to say, you know, their little one sentence in the language that they speak in. Other kids are just like, I just want to curl up in a ball in the back of the car and not have to go inside the building and have to meet more people and be on display and have all this pressure. And so give permission for them to not have to do that. Maybe they love it, so you can always ask. But make sure you're not putting that pressure on them to perform, because it's their parents' jobs, it's not theirs. They didn't choose it. Ask good questions specific to them as individuals. You know what? I think we have time. I have another video for this. How to talk to TCKs.
My name is Rachel Ascaris.
My name is Trillick.
My name is Joseph Chandra.
My name is Mark Johnson.
My name is Jonathan Chandra.
What's your name?
Sarah
Bella.
My name is Josh Dark.
I'm a student at Cameron about the people who mentioned.
Has anybody been told about it?
At one point, somebody asked me if Mandalorian was in Europe, and I was like, it has changed in the name.
How to talk to CCKs. Running low on time now, so I'm going to go a little faster through these. MKs value genuineness and deep conversation. A lot of them tell me that the American church is shallow, that Americans are shallow, that they can't make friends with Americans, and there's a lot of stereotypes going around, and that's what they believe. It's not really true. Americans aren't more shallow than TCKs. They can be just as deep and interesting. They just don't usually show it right away. I think TCKs, because they move so often and they make friends so many times, they have to do it fast. They're like, you're going to be here for a year. I'm not going to waste a month playing video games with you, because then we only have 11 months to be really friends. So it's like, hi, I'm Allie. Tell me your life story. Let's get into it, because we don't have much time together if we're going to be friends. And I want to know right away, are you someone that's worth being friends with? Am I going to spend my time with you? I don't have much time. I'm going to move in here. So I don't want to waste my time making small talk, playing youth group games. If that's all I'm going to do while I'm here, I want to have real connection. And that's hard, because most American kids, if they've always lived in the same place, they've had the same friends the whole time, they don't just meet someone and tell them their life story. So that's personal, and that's valuable to them. And they have a lot of time to make friends, so why rush it? Why would you want to know that about me? That's weird. Maybe you're an unhealthy person. And so there's this misunderstanding, I think, that happens for TCKs making friendships. How do you help with that? I think one cheat that works really well is encouraging MKs to go to camps and retreats. Because if there's one place that American kids are going to get really deep and open up, it's when they go to summer camp.
Yep.
And it's the spiritual high, and they're opening up to people about stuff they don't normally talk about. And that's really a chance for TCKs to see, like, oh, these kids have deep thoughts. These kids are cool. These kids can be my friend. And, you know, when they're new in a place, they usually don't want to go to a camp or to a youth group retreat, because that's intimidating and they don't know anyone. But really encourage them to go, because that's where they're going to actually get to know people. Look for older mentors for MKs. If kids their age won't talk to them, someone who's maybe 3 or 4 years older would. You know, they want to mentor, they want to go more deep, and maybe this person can also help them understand American culture and not just say, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. Sorry. teach about engaging deep topics that connect to MKs. This is if, you know, you're sending maybe a short-term team overseas to work with TCKs, or you have a lot of TCKs in like a youth group or a teaching thing. You know what? You can skip a lot of the like games and intro stuff and really get to the good stuff, and that's what they want. MKs have accumulated losses and grief. They don't move, the people around them do. They often don't know they need to grieve. And it can come out in really weird ways. My coworker Heidi said that when she was in college, she went to like this action thriller movie with her friends. It was all like machine guns and sword fights, but it took place in the jungle. She grew up in Malaysia, and watching the movie, it was all these jungle scenes, and it was like home. And she started sobbing in the movie theater with her guy friends, and it was really uncomfortable. But she had all these losses and stuff that she hadn't grieved, and, you know, seeing that, grief can come out in weird ways if you don't deal with it. You can help by listening without trying to fix it. They're not going to undo the moves. They're not going to go back and collect all their childhood belongings that they don't have. You can't fix it, but you can listen. Don't assume you understand what they're going through, and don't ever say, oh, I get it, or I understand, because you don't. You know, even though I'm a TCK, I don't say that to my TCKs. I don't say, I understand or I get it, because I haven't lived their experience. I think oftentimes when you hear that, your first thought is, no, you don't, just like people said. but you can listen and try to understand. Look out for signs of depression, suicidal thoughts, etc. Grief can look a lot like depression and anxiety. that there's also real depression, real anxiety, and real suicidal thoughts and harm. And when that is showing up, they really need professional help. There's tons of people at this conference that are doing that, offering counseling, professional help, and therapy. So know when to look for that and to reach out for more. MKs may feel pressure to be perfect. Shoulds are an indicator of this. I should be doing this, should have done that. Model vulnerability and imperfection. I think the more people around them who aren't trying to be perfect and are okay with it, that can be really powerful. Tell them and show them it's okay to not be perfect. You know, the perfect time to do this is when they mess up and they do something that you don't like. And instead of coming down hard and saying, you need to be the example in your community, people are looking at you to do good things, you know, show them grace and show them that's okay. Everyone messes up. Think through your own expectations for MKs and PKs. You know, even if you are an MK or a PK or a missionary, do you subconsciously see, you know, if you see that kid running around pulling pigtails, are you thinking, well, he should be better than that, you know? Sometimes I do that, and I'm a missionary kid. So we need to think through that. MKs are unsettled and often don't have a home base. Long-lasting relationships are rare for missionary kids. Even as adults, many MKs move every couple years. So if you can be a consistent presence in an MK's life, you know, be the one who changes the diaper and helps them at youth group and takes them out and buys them clothes every time that they're there. You know, they might not remember you the first time, but eventually you'll be one of the faces that stick, and they'll be like, wow, that person has actually known me for 10 years. And it, like, outside of family, you might be the only one who's known them for that long. And that can be really powerful, to have someone who's known you through all these different parts of your life. You know, you can do this with invitations to your home. You can send them messages online and tell them that you're praying for them. You can send them care packages. You can help them when they go to college or after college. If your church is the sending base for MKs, you could become that American church that they love, that is consistent, that keeps showing up, that isn't just, you know, another church on the list of the road trip that they don't remember. And that would be amazing. And pray for the missionary kids, you know. I think this applies for all of them. They need your prayer. You know, some of them are super happy and love it, and some of them are miserable because they're all different. But all of them need your prayer, you know. You pray for good transitions. You can pray for friends and friends that last. Pray for a genuine relationship with God that's based on trust and not performance. You know, that they'll know that they don't have to perform for God, that God loves them, even when they're not perfect, you know, because they never are perfect. You can pray for them. And I think it's even more awesome if you can write out your prayers and send that to them and say, this is what I'm praying for you. And they know that that's happening. So I'm a little bit over time, so I'm going to skip that. But thank you. Come on, give evaluations. You're supposed to say that.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, thank you.
I have another handout, actually.
Thank you, everybody. I just know that there's an evaluation form. We'd love to get those at the end. So don't forget about that. And then now it's lunch. So lunch is, you go down the second floor, walk that way down the ramp, and there's two dining halls down there where
we'll be. And this last handout is not everything I said, but it's emotional support and practical help that you can give to missionary kids. So take that with you. Yeah, you can email me if you guys want to talk more. I'm in the cities. I live in Richfield, so we can get together for coffee. And this is my website. I have about 200 books and resources about third culture kids with reviews and Amazon links that I've curated with my coworker Heidi. So you can check that out if you want more books.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much.